Hi, 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 everybody. Yes, you recognize this voice. So before we start, I want to let you know that this podcast is not the only place I'm talking about food. Head over to joseandres.substack.com for more stories, recipes, and discussion on the power of food to change our world for the better. Well, I don't know about you, but I spend 364 days of the year getting ready for Thanksgiving. Yeah. I buy my turkeys a year ahead. I'm thinking about the menu a year ahead. So what we are doing today at Longer Tables this week, well, I'm bringing you somebody very special. My friend, Martha Stewart, the queen of entertaining. And you know, I cannot believe already it's more than 40 years since the first book she published. Since then, yeah, she is rolling. So today we're gonna be drinking wine together. And I had one too many, I will say, CBD gummies. And yeah, we talk about the day that actually Martha Stewart herself directly or indirectly mess up Thanksgiving turkey, people. And my friends, in case you don't care about the turkey because you don't eat meat or because it's always dry, I'm gonna show you how to make a great vegetable dish for your holiday buffet. Oh yeah! And I'm gonna be answering some Thanksgiving questions from listeners like you. So, don't go away. So here we are again in Longer Tables, and you already know everything there is to know about my very good friend, Martha Stewart. Welcome to the show, Martha.
Thank you. So nice to be with you.
So let's go directly into business. Your mom, how was like growing up with this amazing cook?
Well, Big Martha was the mother of six children. She had six children over a period of 21 years. So she was very maternal, very kind, and very lovely mother. I mean, not one of her children would say anything other than mom was the best. She cooked all the meals. She made sure that we were beautifully clothed. She sewed our clothes. She is also a teacher. So when the youngest child, Laura, went to kindergarten, mother went right back to teaching sixth grade. She was just incredible. And the food she cooked was out of the garden. My dad was a pharmaceutical salesman. So dad was dealing with Pfizer, selling the drugs to doctors, visiting doctors all day long. And I remember when a dairy that was in our town, a cow dairy for milk, burned. All the cows were suffering from burns. And I remember my mother and father going to visit the cows, sort of like you visiting the disasters of humans. They went and medicated the cows and then took us all over there to see the suffering cows, which remains with me till this day because it was a pretty horrible sight. But that we were taking care of them was the important thing, that we were facing disaster and taking care of them. That's what my parents did. My parents were really very civic-minded. Dad was the scoutmaster. He did the Eagle Scouts, so he would sit on the stage with the big American Indian headdress on made out of feathers and chant all the Eagle Scout pledges to his audience of Eagle Scouts. That's the highest Boy Scout that you can be as an Eagle Scout.
So did Big Martha, your dad, entertain a lot at home? How you became the queen of entertainment?
I was the apprentice. I was little Martha. So I was first daughter of six children, second child. Then I was constantly cooking in the kitchen next to mom.
We had people coming in.
Oh, with wine. Oh, my gosh. What kind of wine did you get us?
Because we are in a very, very, very beautiful room. What is the place of this room?
This was the newsstand.
The newsstand at the Rockefeller Center.
Yes. Oh, here, let's move this away so that we can get this back. Yeah.
Thank you for opening me the wine, people. Oh, my God. This is Castillo Higay Rioja. Gran Reserva 2010. Yeah, I have no more budget.
So this is a Spanish wine that we are going to drink. Well, it's just funny that you asked about Big Martha, because just yesterday I assumed the role of Big Martha in our family. And I had a niece, the daughter of my sister Laura, and a nephew, the son of my sister Kathy, come to my house. And we filmed both of them learning how to make potato pierogi from me, because I had learned at my mother's knee. So I taught them how to make the dough and how to make the filling and how to form the dumplings, how to cook them, make the brown butter, and serve them. So that we did that just yesterday. Isn't that nice?
Unbelievable.
And so, they are delicious, those
pierogi. So pierogi was one thing that reminds you of where you began, but what other dishes you remember that your mom will make that you will say, oh my God, nothing like what Big Martha...
Nobody else
cook.
Can make it like that. Oh, like stuffed cabbage.
Stuffed cabbage.
We call them gulumpki.
Gulumpki.
Yeah, so you might have had them in Ukraine.
All those dishes are very... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're delicious.
Eastern Europe.
And her parents all came from Lviv in Poland. Wow. And they came over when they were children and settled. Her parents settled in Buffalo, New York.
Lviv will be Lviv.
Yes.
Lviv. Well, Lviv.
Yeah,
Poland, but
Buffalo.
But Lviv in Ukraine.
Yes, exactly.
Leopolis, we call it in Spanish. Oh my God!
And
so your ancestors will be Ukrainian Polish.
Ukrainian Polish and Greek from the island of Kos, way, way back. I mean, it's a long time ago. My father's last name was Kostira. And they all emigrated from Kos to Poland. And they were farmers also. And so they grew up in Krakow. And Krakow is like a breadbasket of Poland.
Yep.
The most beautiful, beautiful farmland there and gorgeous food. My mother also made something that you would love. She made a jellied pig's feet called stujolina.
It's stujolina.
Yes. And that's, you would boil the pig's feet, and you had to have knuckles too, because the knuckles had more gelatin. And so you'd boil that until the meat falls off the bone. You boil it with white onions, and then you serve that and garlic. And then you take all the meat off the bones and chop it all up with the skin. The skin is important. And you then strain all the liquid, and you make a beautiful mold of jellied pig's feet. And you eat it with white vinegar and fresh grated horseradish.
It's amazing to have, going forward, memories back when we have the first thoughts about what we used to eat with our family. It kind of makes you find who you are again.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I did yesterday, because my nephew, Morgan, he was this very brilliant young man, handsome, tall, father of three little girls. He wanted to know exactly how to make pierogi. And he... At my mother's funeral, he gave a eulogy of describing my mother making pierogi for his family. And he said it was a hot day and the kitchen got very hot. And my mother just took her blouse off and kept her apron on with a brassiere. And this is what he described. And she just continued unabashedly making pierogi in his kitchen. And we all laughed at the funeral, because that's exactly what my mother would have done. And not thought a thing about it. She just was hot. She just said she was too hot. She had to do that. But Mom was not only a really, really great cook, she knew ingredients very nicely, too. She really cared about the ingredients. But our food was homegrown for the most part, simple, delicious, healthy. None of us have cavities. We all have clear skin. We all, hopefully will live a good long time. So it was a simple beginning to a complicated life.
Complicated because...
My life is complicated. I do a lot of different things.
Well, you had your first entertaining in
yes.
1982.
Yes.
My first
book, which is 40 years old this year. Can you imagine? 40 years, and I didn't write it until I was 41 years old. So I'm getting older, But I think I'm getting better. And I think that, and I'm on my 100th book right now. 100. How many books have you written? You have a lot.
I have only four.
Oh, four?
Nobody can catch up with you.
I wrote two of your books.
You're like a modern Irma Rombauer, the Joy of Cooking.
That's a compliment.
Later in her life, and look at what she's become. Obviously, nobody doubts it. I mean, come on. You really created the first food media empire.
Well,
in more ways
than
one, obviously. So what we want to know is those stories of being a businesswoman in early 80s.
Well, in 1982, I write this first book, and they didn't trust me to write the story, so they wanted me to get someone to help me. And I had not found my voice yet. I mean, I was 41 years old. I had been a stockbroker. I had been a model before that. And I didn't know I could really write. So I got Betsy Hawes Weinstock. She was a writer for the New Yorker magazine, a beautiful writer. And so she helped me find my voice, my writing voice.
Well, you were a mother when you were 13.
Yes, I was.
So, yes, you were.
But that's a model. That's not a voice.
Okay.
Okay, that's a look. Okay.
I believe things have changed.
I was
obviously
a look.
Yeah. Things have been changing, and in a very big way, they've been changing because a woman like you has shown the way, I would say not only to women, but also to men like me.
Oh, yes. And my fastest growing audience right now is men, which is so nice because I think that they also appreciate what I have taught people. And because I was a child of two teachers, both my parents were teachers. My father was a teacher as well as my mother. And they taught us to really respect our teachers and to learn something new every day, which is still one of my mottos, and to be bold and to be resilient.
So one of the first time I was honored to be invited.
Cheers, by the way.
Hey.
We're drinking this beautiful Rioja.
Castillo y Gallo. But I want to go back to...
Oh, it's that good.
This is amazing. Mm. Right? I want to go back to... I remember being invited by you, by your team. I was cooking with you in this amazing, pristine, beautiful,
studio.
Shiny kitchen. That happens was in a studio, but could be in the most amazing, beautiful house. And I remember, this is the way I am, that I was very much cooking a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this. And you were much more precise. Jose, how many teaspoons? How many tablespoons? How many grams? You were perfection. But even the so perfect Martha Stewart, maybe you had a few disasters here and there in the kitchen. I mean, what was a time that something went wrong for Martha?
Okay, we have Thanksgiving coming up. And I've been thinking turkey, right? And I remember the one major disaster I had in the kitchen, the biggest disaster in the kitchen, was my first Thanksgiving when I had my family and my husband's family. Remember, I was 19 years old when I got married, and I was a student. My husband was at Yale Law School, and we were living in a little cottage on a lake outside of New Haven, and I wanted to have everybody for Thanksgiving dinner. So I had made my stuffings. I had bought the huge turkey, a 32-pound turkey. It was a beautiful fresh-killed turkey. And I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to stuff it because I had read you cannot stuff a turkey before you're going to put it in the oven. You'll get all kinds of problems and food poisoning and da-da-da. So I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, but I had asked my husband to preheat the oven. And it had to be preheated to 320 degrees. I was going to do a slow roast of this turkey because it was so big. And he had put the oven on broil. And I didn't check it. And that was the last time I did not check a temperature in my life because I went back to bed and I woke up to a house full of black smoke. The turkey had broiled. The skin had broiled.
Like black and blue? How do you call it?
No, black. Black. And... And I was so upset, and I ran. I got in the car, drove
down. You created
down
a new dish.
Turkey. I know.
With super crispy
black skin. So I went down. I drove down the road to the Godsey Turkey Farm. They were all packed up to leave for Florida because they had made their money and they were going to Florida. But they had one turkey left in the cooler, and they gave it to me because they laughed about this story.
In the cooler or in the freezer?
No, it was in the cooler. They were going to put it.
You were safe.
I was safe. I ran back home. And this is like only a half a mile down the road. I went back home, took the stuffing out of the burnt turkey and put it in the new turkey and adjusted the temperature and everything. And then I could go back to bed for a couple hours.
So Martha you save Thanksgiving?
I did. And then guess what? The turkey that was black was so delicious. We tasted it. We skin, you know, took the black skin off. It was so delicious.
So is now a new tradition in Martha Stewart?
No, there is a recipe. No, then
black skin broiler. No, then turkey and
a friend of mine has a recipe for blackened turkey, and she's made it on my show. It's a combination of all kinds of spices and Coca-Cola and all other kinds of things that makes the skin black.
So every time we see you, you seem to start everything from scratch.
We like, we
come
like
on,
that.
But tell me the truth. Come on, you cheat sometimes. You have to cheat.
I rarely cheat.
But if you were going to cheat in something you're not making from scratch, what that thing will be that?
Just the other day, I had this argument with someone. They said they like this kind of tomato sauce. Rao's is good. Paul Newman's sauce. I have never ever bought a tomato sauce.
So you will not buy my potato chips because I already fried them for you?
No, well, no. Potato chips, you know, if I'm going to serve onion dip, I'll buy the tomato.
So that's kind of cheating. You're not making the potatoes from scratch.
But the best potato chips are the ones I make, waffle potato chips, cut like waffles.
Oh, yeah. With the mandolin.
And yes, and I cook them in olive oil, in very good olive oil.
Spanish olive oil, I hope.
I think it is. And sea salt. Those are the best chips there are.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that, yes, you like to cook everything from scratch.
Rarely buy something pre-cooked. And I have never ordered in a pizza. I don't order in. I don't like takeout food. I like to eat in restaurants or in the car. I will stop by your fabulous...
So during the pandemic, you were like Martha Stewart cooking.
I was the
day.
Cook. Because I have a farm. I live on a farm. So we have our own eggs. We have our own chickens. We have our own gardens. And I have my own citrus now. I have not bought a lemon in a very long time. And I live in New York State. So really, it's
so Martha,
true.
Moving into the next topic I wanted to touch. Obviously...
But I'm not perfect, everybody. Just know that once on a TV show, my nephew pointed out that I said perfectly perfect 21 times in one show.
Martha Stewart saying never she's not perfect is making the rest of us looking like, oh my God.
Your well, food is perfect, Jose.
So you're building this amazing business. You'll be more beyond the book. You create the Martha Stewart, Omnimedia, books, TV shows, magazines. Do you feel that at the beginning you had to be more Martha Stewart, more serious, because being in business and being the leader you were becoming, you had to portray this kind of serious look?
Well,
because lately I see it's almost like a huge change from the Martha of the past and the Martha of today. Now you are doing so many different things. Seems you are laughing in every corner, single time.
I guess you can say that I've loosened up a little bit. And because remember, when you're starting a business, they have to take you seriously. And you're raising money for an IPO. It was hard to raise that money originally. And then I finally got the right partner who was not going to take 60% of the business. The first partner said, oh, yeah, we'll invest 60-40. And I said, well, 60 for me and 40 for you. And he said, oh, no, the other way around, Martha. You're just a beginner. And I walked out. I walked out of that negotiation. That came from my parents. Knowing your self-worth is terribly important when you're starting in business. Knowing that you have a good idea is very important when you're starting a business. That kind of self-confidence engendered by my parents, basically, was a good foundation.
So just for us to understand how loosened up you're becoming, I've been hearing lately that you're having crushes.
Crushes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I heard that I had a crush on Snoop Dogg. I read it as a front page story in some one of those national something or other. And it's just funny. I just laugh about stuff like that. As my mother rolls over in her grave, I just laugh because it's kind of amusing. Press is press. Publicity is publicity. And yet what it does is just engender kind of a nice easiness. It also shows you that your demographic can grow if you are a little bit more understanding of all the different kinds of people that you appeal to.
But the collaboration you and Snoop Dogg are doing is amazing.
Yeah,
you
it's
seem
been
to have
it's
such
been
an
great.
Amazing chemistry.
Well, he's an incredible, easygoing guy.
Creative like you?
Very creative. And we work on several big projects together, Bic lighters, Skechers shoes. We've had a show, three seasons of a fantastic show called Potluck Dinner. And you know, the pot is there, it's smoking away. And I only breathe the smoke, and he does the smoking. It's a very it's an easygoing relationship, but it look you saw the Gastro Ghetto guys just
amazing.
This morning. They love me because I go with the flow, and I think you learn that as you get older.
So I have in front of me here these Martha Stewart CBD
gummies,
wellness gummies.
Yes,
and I've been tasting one, two different flavors, different fruits. They're amazing.
They're delicious. And we try to make our gummies not only high and delicious in CBD, and they are wellness gummies because they promote sleep. They help you get easy if you're nervous.
Yeah, I'm falling asleep right now,
oh,
but not
no,
because
not.
Your conversation is not amazing. It's because I had few of these gummies CBD.
And it's a very nice partnership with Canopy, a big cannabis company in Canada.
So before we go, Thanksgiving. You want a perfect Martha Stewart-style turkey that even if you messed up, she already told you what to do?
Yeah.
You get in a car and you find a new turkey?
Turkey 101, deep-fried turkey, or spatchcock turkey. They're all really good.
Well, Martha, it was a great honor to have you here in Longer Tables. We are so lucky that you decided to spend here a little bit of time
drinking
with us.
Really good wine and becoming very loose-tongued. Yes. It's a pleasure to be here, really. You are amazing.
My sister, until next time, thank you.
Thank you.
Like what you hear? Well, subscribe to Longer Tables at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you listen. You are not going to want to miss what's coming up next.
Well, all right. We had a great conversation with my very good friend, Martha Stewart. And I'm going to show you a recipe that actually is the most anti-Martha Stewart in the history, because as precise she is on her cooking, she's precise when I'm more whatever. And I'm going to show you a recipe that is whatever. I'm going to show you a Brussels sprouts fried rice. In my restaurant, Brussels sprouts is one of the top selling items. And actually, I want you to bring Brussels sprouts into your life. Why? Because you have two people. But I'm not only doing Brussels sprouts on its own. I'm making something like you are going to incorporate in your Thanksgiving menu, which is a Brussels sprouts fried rice. And why fried rice? Because how many times we go to the Chinese restaurant and they give us so many of those baskets with white rice that we have them in the refrigerator. They get moldy. We throw them garbage. No, you can't use it. This is what you do. We are just cutting these Brussels sprouts into a julienne. You cut it very, very thin. Why? Because people don't like Brussels sprouts, because we overcook them. We overcook them, people. And when you overcook something, what happens? He's unhappy. Don't overcook them and the Brussels sprouts will be happy. And this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna put some oil, like always. And as soon as the oil gets hot, we're gonna start cooking the Brussels sprouts. In the meantime, this is also what I'm gonna do. You start taking the petals away. And these petals, we're gonna keep them on the side. And these petals are gonna be raw. Are you with me? Why? Because I love the Brussels sprouts when they're raw. And that's what you do. You can put the entire family doing this. Especially if you have an annoying guest in your Thanksgiving table. You put him in the corner of the kitchen table, and I say him because usually who is annoying is a man. And you put them taking the petals of 2 kilos, 4 pounds of Brussels sprouts. It's the best thing you can do with a typical annoying family member or the annoying friend that you had to invite because he didn't have anywhere else to go. It's fine. And you see what I'm doing? I am being that annoying person right now. So I have all these Brussels sprouts. I have the leaves. And then, my friends, I'm going to get some radishes. We are in season of radishes. I think so. Are we in season of radishes? Not really. Well, my radishes are usually in the spring, but I see a lot of radishes in the fall too. And what you do is this. You see what I have here? You have all these beautiful thin slices. You can do this with the help of a knife, or you can do more manicure, pedicure, and you get the mandolin. I have now here the radishes, thinly sliced, the oil is hot. And in this moment, my friends, these thinly sliced Brussels sprouts are going into the oil. Can you hear the sound? And you start sautéing. So we put some salt and we keep cooking it. I'm gonna add a little bit more oil. Why? Because we need to support the people that produce olive oil. And more oil is good for you. So yes, we keep sautéing. As we're cooking this, we already have this kind of amazing salad of the raw Brussels sprouts and the radishes. We put some olive oil. I'm gonna put some salt. And now I need a plate, okay? Take a look what I'm about to do. I have here some romaine. I'm cutting it in chunks. Not too big, not too small, just in chunks. Like if you were making a salad. And I'm putting it on the plate. And I'm gonna get some endives. Why? Because I love endives. And if you love endives like I do, you will use endives. And you put them in the bottom of the plate. Now, you go back to the Brussels sprouts. They're getting some color. This is good. And in this moment, some salt and some vinegar. What vinegar? Whatever vinegar you have. I have sherry here. You don't have sherry, you can put lemon juice. You don't have lemon juice, you can put cider vinegar. You don't have that, even balsamic vinegar. Just put whatever vinegar you have. And right now, we are putting the vinegar. The salad is in the bottom. And this is the moment of truth. The Brussels sprouts are almost cooked. The rice, well, the leftover from your Chinese restaurant or the one you cook, goes into this pan. In this moment, my friends, I have the best ripe rice Brussels sprouts ever. Only olive oil, only a little bit of salt, and you start mixing the Brussels sprouts with the rice. Oh my God, this smells so good. The great thing is that for anybody that doesn't like Brussels sprouts, they're gonna love this dish. You see, I'm not adding anything else. I mean, you have oyster sauce, you wanna put it, put it. You have soy sauce, put it. You don't have it, don't put it. This is very simple. It's just the white rice, the olive oil, and the Brussels sprouts. And now you can see this rice is done. It's never gonna be overcooked. This dish is even good at room temperature, but if you make it hot, it's even better. And take a look what I'm doing right now. I'm putting the rice, my friends, right on top. And I'm opening the rice above this salad of romaine and endives, and you can use whatever salad you have. All of the salad is like we have three layers of this rice. The Brussels sprouts, the radish, the cooked sprouts, the raw sprouts, and just to finish, one of my favorite things ever, sesame seeds on top. This is gonna be a rice dish with Brussels sprouts. Everybody's gonna love in your family for the years to come. If you want to watch me making this amazing Brussels sprouts fried rice for Thanksgiving, hey, just go to my YouTube channel, which I just found out they have a YouTube channel. So I'm very happy you know too now. Yeah.
Life is full of questions, and you, my friends, have a lot of them. Up next, I take phone calls from the people out there who want answers. And if you have questions of your own, get in touch through the website, joseandres.substack.com.
Hi, Jose. My name is Tara.
Hello, Tara. How are you? Welcome to Longer Tables.
Thank you. I'm calling from outside of Boston, and I'm getting ready for Thanksgiving, and I'm wondering if you have a dessert recommendation for my family.
A dessert recommendation for Thanksgiving. Okay, what part outside Boston are you calling me from?
So I'm from a historical town called Lexington, which is 15 miles outside of Boston. It's where the American Revolutionary War began.
In Lexington, I need to visit. I need to be there. I mean,
you should come.
Listen, as a Spaniard, I'm not going to tell you how proud I am that Spain support the George Washington troops and others to try to push the English and the British away. So let me tell you, the one thing I will not do is anything that brings the British culture into American Thanksgiving. Why? Because they were trying to oppress America. So I will say we need to do, yes, a Spanish dessert. You agree with me so far?
I'm definitely with you.
And let's say, yeah, I can give you a recipe for what? I mean, pecan pie, pumpkin pie. How many people are you having?
So I have about 20 people this year.
Oh, you need to.
And 8 of those are kids.
Oh, 8 of those are kids. Oh.
Not mine. Not all mine.
No. That's good. That's a good one. 20 people, 8 kids. Okay. Let me be realistic.
And not all of those people grew up in the U.S., so they're not necessarily tied to tradition or anything like that.
Okay, but tradition is a conversation that can go in so many ways because the traditions of today, maybe 100 years ago, were modernity. So, you know, who knows? Whatever you're doing right now in your house, this coming Thanksgiving will become traditional in America 100 years from today. So, okay, you know what I would do if I was you? What is the background of those people joining you? From what countries or continents?
So 2 of them are from India.
All right.
And 3 or 4 of them, okay, they're American, but they're coming from Hawaii.
Oh my God, so, this is fascinating. I have the dessert for you. We need to do fruit. And I think you need to do mango. You need to do mango. Mango. Ooh. Yeah, mango. And you need to do pomegranates. Why? Because there's already pomegranates out there. And also we are in the season of citrus. We don't think about it, but every Thanksgiving table should always have oranges. In America, we celebrate oranges everywhere. I mean, Florida, California, obviously the connection with Spain. Mango is celebrated, obviously, in the Caribbean. Yes, India, everywhere. So why you don't do just an amazing mango with a lot of pomegranates, with amazing freshly squeezed orange juice, and the zest of the same citrus right on top in the last second. And then a touch of salt. Yeah, let's be nice to the British and put mild on salt. That's it. The only ingredient I allow you to be British origin. And why not a touch of olive oil? And if it can be from Spain. Mm. There we are bringing India. We are bringing America. We are bringing Spain. And my friend, we are even bringing the British that tried to oppress America from being free. Yes, that's what I was you. That's the dessert I will cook on Thanksgiving in individual bowls, perfectly presented, no headaches. The children can help you take the seeds out from the pomegranate fruit. Oh my God, this can be an amazing dessert, which maybe becomes the new favorite traditional dessert. You said Lexington?
Lexington, yes. And I think it also sounds like something that would be very good after a heavy meal. So thank you.
Well, if you don't want a heavy meal, my friend, don't eat the turkey, don't eat the gravy, and don't eat the mashed potato, and then it'll be very light. You see, it's heavy because, yes, we do doubles and triples of the turkey, the gravy, and the mashed potato. I will go directly to the dessert. Actually, if you put more salt and more olive oil, that same dessert I give you can be a perfect opening salad. You see, life is about choices, my friend. Now you have all the spectrum of possibilities. Thank you very much, Tara.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lisa Olweiler. I'm from Fairfax, Virginia.
Oh, Fairfax, you are on the other side of the river. We have the almighty Potomac separating us, but our voices are united through the power of radio. So, what question you have for me?
Thank you, Jose. Yes. So, I love to put mayonnaise on my turkey before I prepare it for Thanksgiving. And I hear people are making their own mayonnaise. It seems intimidating. Is it worth it? And how do I do it?
What? You are one of those people that put mayonnaise on her turkey? Finally, I met one.
Yes, I am one of those people.
I'm not saying I support it or not. I'm not playing politics here. I'm only saying that finally I meet somebody that puts mayonnaise on their turkey. And it's like if I am an anthropologist and I'm discovering a new species of humans on planet Earth. I love it because there's a lot of people that tell me it's great. I have other people tell me, what? But here you are looking like a super happy person. So I'm sure
if you survive many Thanksgiving with mayonnaise on your turkey, cannot be a bad thing. So tell me.
It's great. Yes, yes. And so I was thinking, should I make my own mayonnaise this year? It seems like an intimidating process. Is it worth it?
This is a great question, because I love mayonnaise that you buy. Everybody knows I have different brands I love because I like that mayonnaise. And usually I buy the mayonnaise already made and I add olive oil, usually from Spain. But if you are Italian, I let you use Italian. If you love American olive oil, use American. If you are Greek, use Greek. Use whatever you want. But me, you know I'm going to use Spanish. And I add extra olive oil to the pot mayonnaise, because you can keep adding more olive oil and that mayonnaise use becomes 10 times better. Obviously, you can do things like you can add mustard, or you can add sumac, or you can add spices. Oh my God, all of a sudden this becomes like a sophisticated mayonnaise. And you see, you don't have to make it, but in a way, you are making it. And then you can change the flavor that beautiful skin of your turkey and color is going to have by adding new spices into your world. But the question was, should I make it from scratch? I think it's always a great challenge to make something from scratch. What do you have to waste? Just do it. Why? Because it gives a lot of joy to make things from scratch. So you see, if one day your Thanksgiving day is going well and everything is organized and you have extra time, open yourself a good bottle of wine. Open yourself and crack an egg. Get yourself, use a good olive oil. Put yourself a little bit of lemon or a little bit of acidity that is going to help the emulsion. And little by little, start whisking. Put your favorite music. Whisk at the rhythm of the music. Let the beautiful golden stream get in contact with the egg and the white. And slowly but surely, you're going to be creating your own mayonnaise. If it breaks, no problem. Use it as a dressing for your salad. If you make the mayonnaise, use it for your turkey. You see, life is about choices, my friend. In Barcelona, where I come from, we make alioli. Alioli is garlic and oil. Al and oli. And we make alioli, which is a mayonnaise, without the use of egg. This is a challenge. If you are able to make mayonnaise only with garlic and oil, you are a super Jedi. But this will be a recipe for another moment. But my friend, here you have the opportunity to show yourself that you can. I believe in you.
Thank you so much. You painted the best picture, starting with the bottle of wine. So thank you so much. I can't wait to try it.
Well, Lisa, good luck. Happy, happy, happy Thanksgiving to you. I want to see a photo of your turkey covered in this amazing mayonnaise that you're going to be roasting the turkey with. And I want to see a photo on social media, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Bye. Bye, Lisa. Bye. That's a wrap, people. Longer Tables is produced by Chris Collin, who also makes our music. Jane Black is our executive producer. Sasha Mandel is our audio engineer. And remember, if you like what you're hearing, I hope you'll come back for our next episode or sign up for my newsletter, also called Longer Tables, at joseandres.substack.com.